So my presentation will have two parts. I will introduce the projects of the Konstraum in a more or less descriptive way. First I thought to do it in a more theoretical way, but since I don't have much time, I will only describe it. And at the second step, I will show you some results of my research on art, which gives some hints about changes which are perhaps important for our subject, about changes in the art field. The Konstraum was founded in 1993 by three people who came from three different disciplines mainly. We had an art historian, which we just hired this year, who had curatorial experience. Then there was a mathematician who also studied art at an art school, and me as a sociologist who had no formal art education, but I taught at an art school in Vienna before, so I had connections in the art world. The main ideas for starting this project were related to our teaching tasks in a new program, Cultural Sciences, not Cultural Studies, in this German sense. The main difference to Cultural Studies in the British world is that much more disciplines are involved, on the one hand, about a dozen of different disciplines, and that the range of this discipline is much broader than in the Cultural Studies, because Cultural Studies is mainly a mixture between literary studies and social sciences. And in our program, the range is over all three big scientific cultures, humanities, social sciences, including economics, as well as informatics. I will only say some words about the ideas from which we were inspired. We had read a paper of the Collège de France in which for school reform, more or less, in which the idea was proposed to work with artists in schools, not in university, because that was not the theme, but to invite artists in school with the idea that artists, students learn to know culture not in a pedagogical way, but culture, how it is really, it presents itself. Then we were inspired by the idea of continuity between art and science, based on, for instance, Howard Becker, sociologist, or also Pierre Bourdieu, for whom these different fields are all fields of cultural production, of course with differences, or also by Thomas Kuhn, who has a nice idea about the difference between art and science. He says, in my opinion, the only difference is that art has a public and science does not have one. And then we also were inspired by network theory. Since I'm a sociologist, I know how important network relations are in fields of practice for the students after leaving universities. And we also were inspired by theories about implicit learning, because that happens to a high extent as well in science as in the arts. We founded this project, as we called it, and also a project space against the administration of the university, especially the chancellor of that time, who told us it is not possible to have an artistic space in a university, but we ignored it with the help of our dean, who supported us at this time. And this foundation also was not enforced by anyone. It was our own decision to do that because of these reasons. I show you an overview of our projects. You should not read all, but you can see if you go quickly through that we did in this nearly 20 years about 40 projects. That means in the average two projects a year. the projects as such are not financed by the university, sondern we had to raise money for each of these projects. Yeah? The university supports this project and this space by allowing us to do that. Yeah? But we have to raise the money ourselves, mostly, apart from small sums. And we are a kind of low-budget enterprise, depending on how much money we are raising. All these projects that I mentioned here are projects with exhibitions. We have also symposia and things like that. And all this, or nearly all these projects, are embedded in seminars. So we do not do that apart from our teaching. We always integrate students, since we also had the idea of a collective process of producing art. Yeah? Art as collective production, like some sociologists see this. And I can also say that we work with external curators as well as with internal curators. Of course, we also curate ourselves, but we had about 10 curators in these 20 years from the outside. And since one of our, from the three colleagues, one went to the Leipzig Arts Course at the end of the 90s, so we were two, and the mathematician retired some years ago. And at this time, we always have a curator, an internal curator too, yeah? With a high fluctuation, I could say. Regarding inter- or transdisciplinarity in the projects, of course, we have art, which is a discipline of its own. And we always, or nearly always, have art history, since we have the curators. Then sociology is nearly always involved. Then comes informatics with Martin Brandke, who often collaborated in our project. Then sometimes philosophy. For two projects, environmental sciences, which encompasses different disciplines, but mainly it was chemistry and economics, and economics in the more narrow sense also two times. I also only want to give examples for this, the engagement of social science. It's the most easy thing for me to speak about. Four projects with different involvement of the social science perspective. This was the project we started with in 1993. It was a project called Services, which is a term for discussing the autonomy, institutional autonomy of art. And the project dealt with working conditions of artists, or the production perspectives of artists, including collective organization or mobilization of artists, including precarity and things like that. For that, we had invited a curator at this time. He was the director of the Kunstverein in Munich, and an artist who was very young at this time, Andrea Fraser, who is known by now as one of the main representatives for institutional critique. And it's also interesting how these corporations were initiated. We can decide between projects where we have invited artists and projects where artists were proposed by us, by curators, for instance, and projects where artists proposed themselves, so to say, they wrote us a letter or a card and said, would that be perhaps interesting for you to cooperate in a project? For this project, we had invited the artist and the curator, and there was a cooperation before. When I was at the Vienna Art School, I had a seminar where I invited them, and also a symposium, so that I know what was to be expected. We did not say you have to do this or that kind of work. They could choose it themselves, but more or less we could expect what would happen. the involvement of social science in this project was low. It was mainly to participate in the discussions, where you see here a picture, perhaps you know some of these people. Fred Wilson is presenting, an artist that later at the US Pavilion in Venice, for instance, or you see Ute Meter-Bauer, who is now the head of this MIT Visual Arts Program, and Andrea Fraser on the left side. So this was a workshop where creators, artists, and social scientists participated, and our contribution was more or less the contribution to these discussions. Yeah? Then at this nearly the same time, we did a project with Clegg and Goodman. Perhaps you have seen this exhibition in Berlin. I think based in Berlin it was called. Much discussed exhibition, and there was a picture, a portrait of Wolverine there, that were these artists who did that. But at that time, they had developed the idea of public open libraries, which they proposed to install in Hamburg. And this cooperation came this way, that I was visiting this post-human exhibition by Jeffrey Deitch in Hamburg, and there I met these artists and we talked, and they said it could be interesting to cooperate in this project. And so we did. This project was conceived as a portrait of Hamburg, because they are portrait artists, and the portrait should be constructed with the help, among other, with self-organizing social processes, yeah, in the form of these small exchange libraries, which were located in three places in Hamburg, and there the social science participation was relatively strong. We suggested the locations based on social area studies of Hamburg. We did observations what happened with this libraries, and we did also interviews, or the students did interview residents of these locations, and we wrote a social scientific study about what was going on. Another project was this one, Touring Club, by Christian Philip Müller, at this time living in New York. He did study the art world, or the art field of Switzerland, by interviewing, I think, about 30 directors of art institutions. And he asked me to help him construct a questionnaire and analyze the data he had collected, which he also showed in video, but not also in video, but at a minimal art-like sculpture where he put in the questionnaires. This project was suggested by a curator whom we had invited at this time. Perhaps you know him, Hans Ulrich Obrist, with whom we worked in different projects in the 90s. And he suggested Fabrice Hubert, who came to us. He's also a mathematician and an artist, to propose to transform a part of the Musée d'Art Moderne de la Ville de Paris in a supermarket, based on his drawings, which he showed the students, and the students should look for enterprises in Germany who would be able or would be motivated to send their objects they produced to Paris, to this museum, to fill the museum for transforming in such a supermarket. Yeah, that was the project. And there we did research, more or less conventional server research with the visitors. And I show you this for demonstrating that if you want to publish in the art world, or in art world journals, you have to be aware of that they will design your results. Yeah? Normally you would not publish this in this way in a social science journal. I don't have it in color, but in the Metz is green color, and you have these black frames. Yeah. So that was the idea, and also I had different experiences with art journals when I published such kinds of graphics. Once they put it before the article, yeah, before the start of the article, for demonstrating the distance to science, I think. Yeah. Then we did a project with Christian Poltanski, you might perhaps know, which was also suggested by Hans-Ulrich Obrist. This was a project called the Grandparents' Archives. He came to Lüneburg and suggested the students with whom we did a seminar to speak with their grandparents and to collect material from the 30s. Yeah? Diaries, even films could be collected, and to put it in these boxes that you see here. Yeah? There we have a photo of this seminar, this collaboration. And there the contribution of social science was also low, rather low. We instructed the students how to do oral history, the methodology of oral history, and more or less discussed or spoke with them about how doing interviews. Yeah? So it was not research in the more narrow sense, but it was consulting for collecting this material Poltanski had suggested. And this sculpture is a permanent sculpture that could be seen in the building 50 meters from here. At the turn of the century, we worked on sustainable development, because this was a theme at our university at this time, a highly controversial theme at this time. Meanwhile, it's a common sense discourse, but at this time it was heavily fought by economists who said that is a completely crazy idea and things like that. We collaborated with environmental scientists in this project, and we invited mainly one artist, Dan Peterman of Chicago, who invited other artists. He constructed a greenhouse wandering over the campus, and in this greenhouse there were shown pieces by him, but also the work of other artists. And we had this discourse from the art perspective. We also invited economists. I don't know whether you know him, Alain Lipietz. He's a French economist who wrote a text for Documenta 10 on sustainable development. That was the document of Catherine David. So on the last example, or I should say, what was the contribution of social science? In this case, the contribution was that we brought in the discourse of sustainable development and tried to discuss about this idea with people from the art world, yeah? Which at this time was very difficult. Yeah? Meanwhile, that's a kind of fashion, I think, in the art world, but at this time, they all hated it. Yeah? We had curators of Documenta 11 there, we had Hans-Ulrich Obrist there, we had several artists and critics, but it was nearly impossible to find a bridge for this idea at this time. And the last example, I don't know whether you are familiar with the work of Otto Neurath, who is a philosopher and economist, or who was a philosopher and economist, part of the Viennese circle of logical positivism. And in his fight against metaphysics, he tried to develop a pictorial language, because verbal language was too metaphysic in the view of this circle. And in the beginning, he tried to develop the diagrams and graphics himself, but he soon saw that it would be perhaps more clever to engage an artist. And this was Gerd Arns, a Cologne avant-garde artist at this time in the 20s. And together they developed an atlas which should show in a pictorial way the history of mankind with about 100 tables. And in this project, which was proposed by artists Alice Kreischer and Andreas Siegmann, they proposed to actualize this atlas, yeah, which ended in the 1920s, ranging from 5,000 years before Christ to the 1920s. They wanted to actualize this atlas. And whereas Arns was more or less engaged as a graphic designer by Otto Neurath, who decided all himself, and only let the artists do the graphics. These artists had very clear ideas what should be the content of this atlas. And this was also the problem. We had very heavy fights in this project, and we stopped the project after about 20 tables which were constructed, which because we could not find a consensus in important questions, for instance, regarding the origins of capitalism. Yeah? This was a very heavy fight because they had their ideas, which I did not find convincing. And we openly fought out these differences. And afterwards, they looked for different cooperation partners, and I think that was a good idea. So we cooperated with them for the first 20 tables, and with the other tables they found other people. And I don't know how many of these 100 tables are realized meanwhile, but I think more than 50. So what they expected from social science was that we collect data regarding problems they had defined. Yeah? So they tried to make us to supporting scientists, so to say. And that was not our idea in this case. So that's more or less some examples of what we did and how social science can be involved. And now I will shortly show you some results of my research that are perhaps interesting for the problems we are discussing. I did research in the arts as a sociologist in Zurich, Hamburg, Vienna and Paris with a certain time lag. In the early 90s I started in Vienna, then Paris. I have shown you the exhibition, and last year, in 2009, I asked visitors of art exhibitions in Zurich that about data from 2,500 people, a normal survey research in the social science sense. And we asked very many questions. I only will refer to two. One question we were interested in was, how does the interest for art come into being? Yeah? That's, so from a sociological point of view, it's interesting how this social system is reproducing itself, but it has implications for art mediation and also for art programs like ours. Why? You see here a kind of egocentric network figures. We had asked how important the parents had been, how important relatives had been, friends and acquaintances, artists with whom one is acquainted with or even befriended, the importance of art criticers, art writers, curators, that is to say people from the art world, then teachers, professors at schools and universities, and also galleries. We also put questions about the media, but I ignore this because the media are not really relevant for the interest, for the development of the interest in art. And in the normal sociological literature on this theme, two kinds of relations are stressed. One is parents, cultural capital of parents, and the other is school. Yeah? What is not considered is the role of the artists. And if you look at these figures and look at these red lines, yeah, you see the percentage of those in these four art worlds who answered that the connections with artists for them have been important. Yeah? And that's of this nearly the same or even more relevance than school, and it's of more relevance than the parents, which you see in the blue line. Yeah? You see the teachers and professors at university, because of course in this art public about a certain have an art university or the art school education, yeah? Because of the high self-referentiality of this art field. Yes, and you see how important these informal contacts to artists are. Yeah? And to put it in a more concrete context, since in our program we are not a curatorial school here, but of course some of our students later want to act as curators, for instance, yeah? And others, for instance, as art critics. And if you look at especially what were the results of these kinds of groups, you also see that about 60% of the curators who were in this sample said that these contacts with artists were very important for the development of their interest in art. And the same is true for art critics. Yeah? Of course, art schools and study is important, 77%, but for the half of them it was important to have contacts with artists. So we can conclude that that's a basis also to work with artists in universities. And that's also the experience with our projects, that the motivation or the commitment to the arts is highly enhanced when you can integrate students in such kinds of projects. Yeah? It's not enough, from our point of view, to read books on art or read series on art. It's very important to do that. But it's important as well that they have experiences with artists. Yeah? And that is one possibility to integrate artists in university in programs where it is relevant, yeah, like ours. Then another result. We asked whether these people knew artists. We asked about the artists, the new curators, and if they knew theoreticians. And we also asked them to evaluate them, whether they like them or dislike them in this tradition of this cognitive psychology series. And we also differentiated between center and periphery in the art world. Here you see the result of the question regarding the recognition of some 20 theoreticians and their evaluations by what we call the center of the art field, that is about one-sixth of the population, which is informed about the artists they see, which are visiting exhibitions, who are reading art journals and the like. And you see the results on the horizontal axis, that's the recognition of artists, the percentage of those in the center of the art field who know these theoreticians. Yeah? And on the vertical axis, you see odds. You see the relation between positive and negative evaluations. Yeah? The higher, the better the relation. And there are some people who have such a positive evaluation that they can't be depicted in such a diagram. We had to transform it into a logarithmic scale, which could be done. But I did not do it for this graphic, because only one of these theoreticians was located so high. That was Walter Benjamin, who is everybody's darling in the art field. Yeah. But you see, there is also a median, and there are people who are above the median, and there are people who are below the median. Most of them are philosophers, So we have an art historian, Avi Warburg, but we have also a social scientist. And in this context, it's what interests me the most. It's Pierre Bourdieu, who wrote in the early 80s that art and science do not go, or social science do not go together. Yeah? But a lot has changed since this time, as you see, regarding these results. And this result is even much more extreme. When we only look at the artists in the sample, here you see the preferences regarding theoreticians by the artists in the art field in Zurich. This is a bit of a complicated graphic, but it's enough that you know that in the rectangle, in this rectangle, there are the theoreticians that are highly positively evaluated. There would be 100% positive, and who are at the same time very well known, because here would be 100% of knowledge. Yeah? So all these theoreticians are known by about 90 to 100% of the artists, and they are liked by more than two-thirds, and some are even liked by more. And you see, the most liked or preferred theoretician in artists is a sociologist, meanwhile. Yeah? And the same... because I have nothing, not much to do with Zurich. Yeah? So... that's an interesting thing, because if you're reading... literature on sociology of science, they are saying it's necessary to have bridges between disciplines or free-floating paradigms, yeah? Theoretically speaking. And all these, or many of these authors, are in this sense representatives of free-floating paradigms like Michel Foucault or Pierre Bourdieu or Gilles Deleuze. Yeah? That are authors which are received in very different disciplines, not perhaps in the natural sciences, but partly in the social sciences. They are highly respected, and of course in literary science, in philosophy, yeah, in the media studies, and so on. And also in the art world, in art, yeah, in discipline of art.
Did you ever ask for natural scientists?
I did not ask for natural scientists there. No.
Would there be?
Perhaps. The question would be how many would know them, of course, but I think there would be also. So we only asked for humanities and social scientists. Yes, and a more general result, which is also interesting in our context, if you compare the art worlds of Vienna and Zurich, and there's a time lag of about nearly 20 years, yeah, because it was in Vienna we asked 1993 and in Zurich in 2009 and 2010. Yeah, you see a shift in the art world. Yeah, if you're looking at these points, and these are not the centers. These are all visitors. Yeah, all visitors, and for that, of course, the theoreticians are not so well known like in the center. But here is Vienna on the left side, and here are.
You have to read those because we can't read them.
So you don't. You can't see. Unfortunately, I have only these small figures.
No Freud?
I had him in Vienna, but I restricted it. Of course, because our main interest was in artists. I have about 80 or 100 artists.
But you asked for Jung.
I asked for Jung, yeah. At least. So, what you see is, of course, one could say that's a difference between Zurich and Vienna, but the difference in most dimensions is very small. Yeah? In 80% of the questions, we nearly have the same results in Zurich and Vienna. But regarding some questions, there are differences. And I think that are less differences regarding context, but differences regarding time. Yeah? And you see the points wandering from the left to the right. Yeah? And this means the knowledge of theoreticians. Yeah? There is much more knowledge of theoreticians in the art world than 20 years before. And that could be interpreted as a theoretization of the artistic field, which you could also see when you look at the documentas. When we asked in Vienna, that was the time of Documenta 9, Jan Hood, yeah? Completely theoretically. Yeah? He was organizing boxing fights, yeah, for the public. And then came Catherine David and Wetzor, Roger Bürgel, yeah, and these heavy theoretical discussions at all the documentas. And what I only want to say is that we have a certain shift in the art field regarding intellectualization and theoretization. And this is also a general condition for being possible to cooperate with artists in the university, because we are sharing the same free-floating paradigms, meanwhile, at least in humanities and partly in the social sciences. Yeah?
Is it possible in any way to evaluate the depth of the reception? All the artists go around with book of Deleuze and, you know.
Yes.
But I also wonder how is it received? How is it read? How is it studied?
Yeah, but that's not a social way of thinking. That's of course true, but it's not a study about theoreticians. But you see the difference, yeah? Even if it's superficially received, there's a difference over these 20 years, yeah? And I only want to stress this difference, yeah? That theoreticians, since I also have taught at the art schools, I have taught at the Zurich Art School, at the Vienna Art School, and I see this transformation. And I see that perhaps coming from the Anglo-Saxon world, yeah, even in the German art world, these theoretical discourses are present, yeah, and much more present than when we started. When I started at the Vienna Art School in 1992, I wanted to find a book on Michel Foucault in the library. I could not find anyone. Yeah? That was the situation in 1992 in Vienna, which is not a provincial town. Yeah? And that has completely changed meanwhile, I would say. That is not to say that all artists are interested in theory, but there is a minority big enough that is a bridge for university programs to work with these artists. Yeah? Then, because we had these bridges, yeah? Which were mainly Michel Foucault and Pierre Bourdieu. Yeah? We did exhibitions based on theories of Michel Foucault with Roger Bürgel. We did much work with people who had a certain acquaintance with Pierre Bourdieu, and so on.
Could you describe a little bit your position within the sociology world?
Yes.
Here at the university and outside, kind of following up on one of the questions that we had earlier, in how far does your work in the Kunstraum and the research that is connected to art impact your academic credibility? You know, is it advantageous or disadvantageous that you are working with artists?
So generally, sociology of art is not an important sub discipline of sociology, yeah? But of course there is a section in sociology called sociology of culture or sociology of art, which was growing. And I'm publishing in the scientific world too. Yeah? Even in hardcore statistical journals, you see, I have no fear doing quantitative research. Yeah? So I can, of course, publish the results of this research on art in sociological journals. And partly even my reports on the cooperation with artists. I am also a member of the methodology section of the German Sociological Association, and I reported there once, where only there are quantitative statistical sociologists, about my cooperations with artists. That's possible. Yeah? that does not say that it's interesting very many, but I'm doing this. Yeah? So I'm functioning in the art world as well as in the scientific world. Or I try to function in both worlds. Yeah? And I would also not say that what we are doing with the artists is research in a more narrow sense. We have the term Hans Obrist always spoke of recherche. Yeah? And I think that's a fine term to say that's recherche with artists. Of course, it's gathering of data, it's gathering information, but it's not a kind of research that would be published in a scientific journal. Yeah? There you have to do things like that. Yeah? But that's not the aim. There are different types of research, I would say. Yeah? There is a standardized view of scientific research and scientific fields, and there is a kind of continuity, I would say, zwischen art and science. Yeah?
Ulrich moved to the natural science with laboratorium.
I mean,
that
was the natural evolution of it.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. I'm very interested in the free floating. Can you reflect upon what makes a theory free floating, and what happens when it becomes free floating?
It is free floating when it is moving, or when it is received in different disciplines. Yeah. If you look at the citation rates, yeah. Which authors are the most cited in scientific journals in the 20th century? If you look at this, you see the first one is Foucault, the second one is Pierre Bourdieu, the third one is Jacques Derrida, I think, or then is Hannah Arendt. Yeah? So that are all people who are received in very different disciplines and contexts. Yeah? And long after come the Nobel Prizes from economics, for instance. Yeah? These people have citation rates which are five times as high than the ones of the economic Nobel Prize winners. Yeah? And that is because these are free-floating paradigms, and the economic kind of thinking is not a free-floating paradigm because it's mainly received in economics, yeah? In one discipline. And that is these free-floating paradigms are in a certain sense transdisciplinary. Yeah? They are right in the social sciences as well as in the humanities. Yeah?
It's interesting because when you mention economics as the opposite, or
not the opposite. Yeah, yes, in a certain way, because I have read Sociology of Science, and there was taught that linguistics and economics are the two disciplines that are the most closed against other disciplines, yeah? And that's also my experience. I will not generalize, of course, that's not true of all economists, but we also tried to cooperate with economists of our university. We invited one economist for the project of IBEA, and it was not possible. The thought styles were so different, yeah? Which is not necessarily so, but for the mainstream university economist, yeah, it's very difficult to speak with an artist, and it's difficult for an artist to speak with an economist. Yeah?
It's very difficult for an economist to speak with Bourdieu, for instance, who constantly uses...
No, it's not at all.
Also, economy,
yeah? I have read economists who are writing that's mainly inverted mainstream economy, yeah, because he's... In sociology, we also have this economic sociology, and he's one of the main references with his notions of capital and things like that. Yeah? It's not so different to economic thinking, but it's also
something else. No, it's a free... He made economic thinking free-floating.
Yeah, you can
happened to economics.
Because it's also expressed in a literary way, yeah? And it's not only theory in a normal sense, the sense of deductive or axiomatic theory, which he could would be put easily, it's integrating very many disciplines, I think. Yeah? If you look at his writings, I think he refers at least to 10 different disciplines, yeah? From philosophy to literary theory, art history, sociology, anthropology, etc., etc. Yeah? That's the difference. Yeah? It's not...
Yeah, I'm very curious about your use of the term mainstream, because you're talking about mainstream economists and you're comparing them with Bourdieu, Foucault and Deleuze, which is kind of not exactly a very fair comparison. And I was thinking that perhaps some of the economic theory that is on the edge, that is not mainstream, is precisely the economic theory that deals with complexity science or and that picks up on these people. So I feel as though we're not on a level playing field in the ways that we're talking about
these. I'm talking about citation rates, and I have looked at the citation rates of hundreds of scientists, and I also wanted to say that the most cited are those who are representing these free-floating paradigms. Of course, I know Edgar Morin and this kind of literature, but Edgar Morin is not very much cited. He's cited, but he's not ranked very high in the citation hierarchy.
But then the
I don't want to evaluate myself. I only am telling what I'm seeing in this science of science literature.
Yeah.
I have a question. When you, as a consequence to this research, when you look at the names that are up in the kind of liked ones. Of course, those names, and it's very true from the perspective of teaching in an art school, these are the names that come up. But when they come up, to me, there's a certain danger implied with it, because those free-floating paradigms are also perfect material for instrumentalization and kind of misuse in terms of quoting and whatever. On the one hand, I think Foucault and Bourdieu are interesting to artists to talk about. For one reason, because some of their ideas, and there are also only specific ideas that are picked upon. As an example, the idea of heterotopia, or the heterotopic space, has been picked up in research around curating millions of times for very specific reasons. When one would, though, read the idea of heterotopic space in the context of Foucault's larger research for very different reasons. So isn't there a certain danger to instrumentalizations of these free-floating paradigms that I think are also reflected in those kind of citation ranks and how often things are cited? What is your opinion on that?
Of course, you can instrumentalize every theory, every kind of theory. But I wanted only to say that if you try to bridge different disciplines, and for me, art is a discipline, and sociology is a discipline, and also art history, something like that, you have to have some cognitive bridges, or even some normative bridges, perhaps, And I wanted to show some results. What are those bridges looking like? And I showed this with social scientific research, but I could also tell you what I experience in the cooperation with artists, and that's not so much difference. Of course, there are many conditions that such a cooperation is functioning. That's only a cognitive dimension of such a cooperation. But I think if you want to build bridges, you have also to think about such a cognitive bridge between the disciplines. Where they are to find. And they are different. They are, of course, different bridges. Different ones for the natural sciences, perhaps. I only wanted to show you where the bridge is for the social science, for instance. And Bourdieu would not be the only one, perhaps. There are also other ones. But
Pierre? And then after that, I would like to make a little cut and allow Sally Jane to make her intervention before the lunch break.
Okay. This is so interesting. So it's so many things. But have you thought of? You must have thought of actually making comparison historically. If you go back to the 60s or 70s, and you have the Marxist kind of references, which are still going on in Bourdieu and everything. So I mean that will also be quite, and I would say instrumentalization. But another way of putting it is actually that artists are able to interpret, to use this, to abuse, of course, to use it. So they can read. They are the ideal readers, the readers that hermeneutics want to have. I mean, those who don't look behind the book. Would you find speculation? How would the map look like in 1960?
I think that the difference between the late 1980s and beginning with the late 1980s and the early 1990s is that artists who are somehow interested in society, I would say, have alternatives to Marxism, because Marxism was received for a long time. It was Adorno, all kinds of Marxist thinking in the 60s and in the 70s. They always drew on that kind of thinking. But Luhmann or Bourdieu is a different thing for me, and they were very popular in the 90s, and there was a shift away in a certain way, or a differentiation between the artists who drew on Marxism and those who drew on sociology, so to say. Yeah? With Luhmann and Bourdieu, of course, is a mainstream sociologist in many kinds, and it's only a minority who say that he's a Marxist. I don't think so. Yeah? It's much more Max Weber and Durkheim tradition. Yeah? And that's an interesting phenomenon. So for me, sociology became accepted in the art field for the first time, because before it was only Marxism. Yeah?
Thank you very much, Ulf.